We're back on, and the date today is 16 June 1979. I'm with Major General John Meredith Rockingham, CB, CBE, DSO, and Bar, EDEC, or no, EDCD. There we go. I'll get them all yet. And I've also been noticing here, sir, that you're an officer of the Order of Leopold.
Yes.
The Belgian Croix de Guerre.
Yes.
Companions Baffert mentioned, Order of Merit. United States?
Yes, well, I was in Korea. I was awarded that by the Americans.
Mentioned in dispatches and honorary LLD from the University of New Brunswick.
Yeah.
Correct. Honoris causa, I think, is that the phrase? I'm not sure. My Latin's pretty poor. We were talking, I guess, about 44. You were mentioning.
Well, I was saying that, I was talking about the Rhine crossing, I think. I think it was about February 1944 that we did the Rhine crossing. And because I had the Canadian Highland Brigade, they decided to put me under command of the 51st Highland Division, which was a British division, for the Rhine crossing. And we got what was supposed to be a fairly easy crossing, and it turned into a very horrible one, but we made it anyway. And so I got it. And that's where I got my second DSO. What happened after that? Oh,
you did.
No, we went on twiddling up the coast. We went over the Isel River and into northwestern Holland, and then into northern Germany, and then up to. The war ended for me, VE Day, at Emden.
What was the reaction of the civilian population, say, in Belgium and France, when you... Were you treated as liberators?
Yes, they were pretty cautious, though, and I don't think you can blame them either. They had large numbers of resistance, French resistance, Belgian, Dutch resistance troops, all over the place, who would get pretty excited if an airplane would drop them some gear, machine guns and ammunition and stuff. They'd rush off and they'd say to the population, well, we're just about to have the place liberated now, and you better charge in and take that bridge. And invariably, oh, not invariably, but very often, no soldiers would appear for some little time, and the poor old civilians were being massacred by the Germans. So once they knew you were there and had come to stay, they got treated wonderfully, especially in Holland.
In Holland, surprisingly.
And even to this day, I never meet a Dutchman who doesn't know me or know of me.
Is that right?
Want to buy me a drink or something.
Lots of good wine when you got there, or it all gone?
And it was buried around in various places.
It appeared, did it?
But to this very day, I think the Canadians are very popular with the Dutch.
With Dutch people? Mm. The Germans, I gather, they hadn't thrown up their hands in defeat by any stretch of the imagination. Is that correct, sir?
Yes. you can research this better than I can, but it would seem to me, and this is only a layman's opinion, I suppose, that the fact that both Churchill and Roosevelt said, we'll fight to the end, there'll be no surrender. That was quite early in the war, you remember.
Yes.
I think the Germans thought, well, if we're going to get into the hands of these guys, we'd better fight to the last minute ourselves. And of course, Hitler was a fanatic, so he urged them on to keep on fighting. And there were two or three attempts made on his life, as you know, and none of them successful. And I think the people who took part in these events and were unsuccessful were very quickly put to death. And I think that the Germans were thoroughly scared of Hitler.
No-win situation.
Yeah, and I think what they were really frightened of was that they'd get caught not fighting the best or something, and they'd be killed anyway. Now, that's the case with some of them. Some of them were very, very high morale, such as the Hitler-Jugend division, and there was a para division that we were mixed up with. I think it was the first German para division. And they had a terrifically high morale. They were very good fighters and very proud of themselves. But apart from what I've said about being scared of Hitler, I don't know exactly why. Nor do I know why they went on with this resistance to the last moment on the attack on Emden, for example. The ceasefire occurred about noon, and I was called by Dan Spry, or whoever it was, and said, ceasefire and withdraw to behind this road. Well, I'd never withdrawn. I didn't know how to withdraw. anyway, I did. I got back, and I pulled all my troops back behind this road line. And those Germans were still fighting right up to the very last minute. Amazing. Really amazing.
Well, when VE Day came, was it an empty feeling, or was it very satisfying, or what was the feeling, I guess?
Well, I didn't have much time to feel it. I don't know whether you've gotten your notes there or not, but I was then appointed to command one of the brigade in the Pacific.
It would be the 2nd Canadian Infantry Regiment in the Pacific.
Yeah. And so I was only in Europe, I think, about a week or less after the war ended, before I was on my way back to Canada.
Well, you were certainly a popular fellow. They kept.
And then when VJ Day came along, I retired from the Army as soon as I could gracefully get out and went back to the BC Electric again.
So you didn't want to stay in, though, after you...
No. One, I was out for 5 years, and then...
Why didn't you want to be in there, sir?
Oh, why?
You had...
The purpose of the object of the operation had been achieved.
You had gained substantial rank and had progressed through the Army structure.
Yeah, well, I didn't like the look of it in peacetime, let's put it that way. I decided it wasn't for me, so I went back to civilian life in 1945.
So you retired as a brigadier?
Yeah. And then in 1950, I was negotiating with the Union, and I was running Pacific Stage Lines at that point. I was negotiating with the Union about, they came up with some ridiculous suggestion. What was it? Oh, yeah. Everybody had to, all the bus drivers had to have an hour off at lunch. And I said, how the hell can I give you an hour off when you're going to be up at Chilliwack or down in south of Tacoma or something? Why, you just hire more men so that you'll have two drivers on the bus, one will be eating lunch and the other will be driving it. You can go to hell as far as I'm concerned. Just then the telephone rang, and this is the Minister of Defense, and I thought it was somebody playing some trick on me, so I wasn't very enthusiastic. I didn't respond very readily, and he said,
"Mr. Claxton."
yeah. He said, "The Canadian cabinet has decided to send a force to Korea, and they want you to command it." I said, "Oh, well, what's the matter with the regular brigadiers? Why don't you get one of them?" Well, he said, "There are going to be a lot of civilians in this force, and we think maybe you'd be the best man for it." So back to war I went.
Now, did you remain with the Canadian Scottish? Did you go back to the Canadian Scottish
No.
militia, or did you just go on the reserve list?
No, I was a brigadier in the militia for about a year, I think, during the 5 years. The rest of it I was on the reserve list, yes.
So you got a call from the Minister of National Defense saying, we want you to command in
yeah.
Korea.
Yeah.
Well, sort of put it on a platter.
Well, you couldn't very well say no, even if you had one.
Well, had you been doing any jockeying
to get it there?
Did friends of yours decide, or what?
Well, the only...
it almost appears as if it was out of the blue.
Well, the only thing that I could think of was that General Simmons was just come back to Ottawa then. He was I'd served under him when he was a brigadier as a lieutenant colonel. I served in 4th Brigade, when he was commanding 4th Brigade. He was very fond of me, and Simmons was very fond of me, and I think between the two of them they must have cooked it up. I don't really know how it happened. But
so you were to come out and command a brigade?
Well, I had to organize them, train them, mm-hmm. and then fight them.
Oh, so there wasn't, just wasn't all glory, yeah. And you had the work end of it as well. Now this would be what, 1950. This is 1950, and well, according to my cheat sheet here, from 47 to 50, you were militia brigade commander.
Well, I wasn't for that long, no.
Okay, but
about 1 year, 49 to 50, I think.
49 to 50, and that would be 15th Canadian Infantry Brigade headquarters in Vancouver. And this is, you'd left BC Electric and went to manage BC Stage, or is that all part of
it? Oh, it's all part of the same thing in those days.
I see, okay, sir. Then 50, you were appointed to command the 25th Infantry Brigade Group, organize and train it, from 50 to 52 in Korea. Now, first of all, who was involved?
Well,
where did you get them?
Well,
a volunteer brigade as well, wasn't that part of the political?
Yes, but what the minister said to me was, fill all the positions you can with volunteers, and those that you can't fill with volunteers, the regular army will fill. So that was a pretty nice sort of thing to have handed you on a platter. Then, in addition, well. Then I went to see my boss, who was the president of the BC Electric, Dal Grauer, and I said, I've been invited to go off to war again. I'm afraid I'm going to leave you again. And he said, oh, I'd be very proud of you, very proud of you. And he said, incidentally, if you get into any trouble and you don't like what's going on, come back to us and we'll hire you back here as an executive anytime. So. I had the world by the seat of the pants, eh? Nobody else wanted the job. Here I'd been told that I could go back to BC Electric any day I wanted to. And so we proceeded to fill them with volunteers and then to fill in the gaps with the regular army.
Now, would they be set up on a regimental basis? Or?
Yes, the three battalions. Royal Van Dusen Regiment, Dusen Battalion, the 2nd Battalion. The 2nd Battalion is the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry, and the 2nd Battalion is the Royal Canadian Regiment, the three regular infantry regiments. Only they were all 2nd Battalions. And the 2nd Regiment of the Royal Canadian Horse Artillery, and the a squadron of armor from the Strathconas. They were, first of all, everybody was trying to be very fair, so they made them half Strathconas and half Royal Canadian Dragoons. And they were called the half squadron, and everybody called them the halfies, you know. So they had to get rid of that title. And they called them A squadron, the Lord Strathcona Horse after that. Now, and so on, and I had engineers and Remy and all the rest of it, the brigade group, a whole fighting force, and all fully up to strength. So a fellow from the Directorate of Military Training came along from Ottawa one day and he said, I'll tell you when those troops are ready to go to war. And I said, oh, will you? Why don't you take them to war yourself if you know so much about it? Nobody's going to tell me when my troops are trained. I'm going to say that. So I went straight to Guy Simmons, who was chief of staff at that time, and I told him, I said, I'm not going to have that clown come out of Ottawa and tell me my troops are trained or not trained. So he said, you're quite right. You'll take them to Korea and you'll put yourself under command of the United Nations and do what they did. I said, okay. I went to Korea and that's the way it all started. And I enjoyed that tremendously. It was a wonderful experience. I was completely independent. Naturally, I had to keep Canada's name high up and I had to do what the UN...
Well, it would be the Americans.
Well, the Americans were commanding the
U.S.
Army.
Yeah, well, they were the ones calling the tune.
I came to some terrible blows with the 8th Army commander. Terrible.
This would be who, sir?
Well, there were two of them. Just after I got there, MacArthur was fired.
Yes.
By Truman. And Ridgway went to Japan, and a fellow called Van Fleet took over the 8th Army.
Now he would be what? Would he be a full general? Or?
Yes.
And you were what?
I was a brigadier.
You were still a brigadier?
Yeah. And this, I think, was a little difficult. He wanted me to move some troops up by train one day instead of going in our vehicles with all the weapons on them. And I said, well, they're all loaded now. The weapons are loaded and the troops are ready to load. And he said, well, you'll have to send them by train because the train's there and I've ordered it. And so I put the troops on the train. When I got off the other end, he said to me, you're going up in the line tonight. And I said, no, wait a minute, where are my weapons? Well, I don't know where they are. They're somewhere back on the road. And I said, well, I'm not going anywhere without my weapons and without my radios. There's no chance. Well, he said, we just lost 200 men in that gap today. And 200 men were casualties. And I said, well, you want 200 more casualties, that's what will happen if I put my men in there without the weapons. So, after much bloodshed and tears, finally Canada emerged victorious. So I thought, well, I better tell the minister about this. So I had a private code that existed only between the minister at one end and me at the other. So I sent it over the wire and said, I've come to blows with the Americans. I think I'll get fired any time now. You better have another guy ready to replace me. And he wired back and said, don't be stupid, stand your ground.
So your commander-in-chief, as the Americans are fond of saying, over there, gave you an order and you told him to pretty well to go and hum it. And you were deciding when the time...
Oh, sure. I told him that, too, right at the beginning. I said, now look, you realize that we don't, unlike the Americans, we don't look for the success of a battle by the number of casualties we have. In fact, the less casualties we have, the more successful we are. Now, you like to say that this must have been a hell of a battle we were in last week. We lost 500 men. And I say, well, that's just bad management. So he knew, and I said, that's not, I said, our population in Canada is only 20 million people. You're about 200 million. Maybe you can afford to lose this number of men. We can.
Went over real well, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I didn't care. I couldn't care less because I knew the Canadian government was behind me and I knew that the BC Electric was behind me. I didn't really care at all. Mm-hmm. He didn't like it, he was lumbered. Well, I said to him one day, well, I won't do that. That's what you want me to do. You can try one of my battalion commanders, one of my lieutenant colonels, and see if he'll do it if you like. I won't. No, I said, I don't think I'll do that.
So a little dissension there amongst the... how did you feel dealing as a brigadier with all the brass that must have been flying around Korea?
Well, I was quite happy with it. I don't think they were very happy with me. As I said, I didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
The American officers were equivalent status to mine would care terribly because they would get fired and all sorts of terrible things would happen to them. But There was nothing really that could happen to me, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was determined, and you...
Well, now, what is the situation in Korea now? Now, you got your brigade, I gather it was formed on the West Coast here out of Vancouver, is that correct?
Well, they came from all over to see the...
No, but where did you form up and train?
We trained in Fort Lewis.
In Fort Lewis in Washington?
Yeah.
And you would go over by what?
Well, I went over by ship. I went over by air. Saw them all off in Seattle and then got an airplane, got over there and welcomed them all to Korea.
Yeah, Korea. And you would land where?
Well, Busan is where the ships landed.
Land at Busan.
And we had our ships were all, again, under American direction, we had all the batteries out of the vehicles and the windscreens all covered in paint, just as though we were going into a live assault, when in fact we weren't, we were landing in the port. And apparently the idea of this was that if any salt water came on board, it wouldn't destroy the vehicles. I don't know what the idea of it was. Anyway, that didn't help us much. It took us about 5 or 6 days to get all that crap rolling again.
I'll take a pause here for a moment. We're out of time now. Date today is 16 June 1979, and I will make further arrangements and meet with General Rockingham, hopefully in July, and we will nail down Korea as well as go into more detail through some of the Second War battles. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
Appreciate that. Thank you.